This is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne County. And today I'm at the UCCE office right here in downtown Sonora, just about a half a block north of Courthouse Park. We're in the brick courtyard, and I am so fortunate. I'm talking to Tuolumne Master Gardener Linda Reevely. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Debbie. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm warm enough. Just barely warm enough.
I know, it's a little bit chilly out there.
It is chilly.
Now, Linda, you not only volunteer for the Tuolumne Master Gardener program, but you're also involved in another program with bees. And is that called Sierra Beekeeping?
That is the Sierra Foothill Beekeepers Association.
Okay.
And I am the chief telephone answerer, question answerer. Supposedly my office is education director, but I'm also married to the president of the organization, so we handle a lot of bee things in Tuolumne County, also in Calaveras County. You know, we take bees out of buildings, we advise people about their bees and their bees' health, we help people make decisions about what to do when they do have bees in buildings. Most people prefer to have them removed, but sometimes that's really very difficult or almost impossible. And then we give the exterminators the go-ahead because most exterminators will not kill honeybees.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. Now, this time of year, do you get involved in having to rescue bees or remove bees from buildings? Or is there that kind of problem?
Strangely enough, just the other day, we had a bee call from Chinese camp. The family who lived in this house, every time they went outside, there were honeybees there. And sure enough, we went down and we looked over the situation and we realized that they had bees living in their swamp cooler.
Oh no.
Right on the roof of their house. And so we couldn't remove them this time of year. If we got into the hive, it would be so cold that the important parts of the hive would be killed. So we advised her to seek out an exterminator.
Oh, and just...
because if those bees get in her house, she's got a lot more trouble than she does with them running around outside.
Right.
So we would normally, if it was warmer, be glad to take the bees out of her swamp cooler, even though it does involve climbing up on a roof. Not my favorite activity, but I would be willing to do it in order to save the bees. But we could, if we opened the hive in order to get them out, the cold air would kill them.
So how cold would the air be? And I mean, how cold does it have to be to kill bees?
Well, normal bees will fly even when it's in the 50s.
Oh.
And that's okay. But the larvae, the baby bees who are still in the cells in the hive, require a temperature much closer to 90.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm.
That's really warm.
The brood nest in a beehive is kept at between 90 and about 93 degrees. And they do that in a number of ways. In the summer, they do it by carefully channeling the air around those parts of the beehive so they keep it cooler. Mm-hmm. In the winter time, they do it by a couple of processes. The first one is where there's a whole group of bees who have the amazing potential. You wouldn't think this is true of cold-blooded animals, but they can produce heat in their bodies. Do it in the muscles that actually operate their wings. They can vibrate those muscles without moving the wings, and it generates heat.
That's amazing.
And they keep the central part of the hive where the essentially unborn bees and the queen are warm.
Mm-hmm.
And the other process they do it by is simply by crawling over one another and creating friction.
And that's enough?
And it contributes that little tiny bit more heat to the whole system to keep it warm.
To keep it that warm. Mm-hmm. That is totally amazing. So now if somebody has a beehive, maybe they're a backyard beekeeper, are they just taking the winter off this time of year? I mean, they're just...
Blissfully enough, that's exactly what most beekeepers do.
We are very
busy sometimes of year and not so much in others. The real unfortunate balance in this is, of course, when bees are busy and need attention, it's generally 102, and I have to put on a bee suit or a bee jacket and, you know, look like I'm a polar bear wandering around, and it's hot in there. It really gets hot in there.
Oh, I bet. This
time of year, when I'd love to put on a bee jacket and look like a polar bear, they don't need me.
Oh.
So I don't have to do anything.
And so are they, besides keeping everything warm inside, are they doing anything else?
Well, from the probably the middle of October, first part of November, until the end of December, the queen stops laying, and she's not making any new bees. The bees that she has produced will be born as smaller than normal bees. These bees are called winter bees, and their job is not to go outside and forage. There are still summer bees left, and they're still foraging, but mm-hmm. these little winter bees keep that hive warm and clean, and they get honey from the comb, which is what they've been saving all summer just to do.
Right.
They have saved pollen. They go on pulling the nectar or the honey, reliquefying it, because honey is too thick for bees to eat. They have to mix it with water.
And do they do that with their mouth?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
They do it with their mouths. And they make this kind of, you know, thinner product, like if you just stir water into honey.
Okay.
And that's what they eat, that's what they feed the larva, and that's what they feed the queen. And they also mix that slurry, that honey liquid,
right,
with the pollen to make something called bee bread that they feed to the larva.
Oh my gosh.
And what you're getting there is the pollen provides protein and a lot of minerals, and the carbohydrates, the power source for the bees, comes from nectar, which is made into honey, which is again reliquefied and fed to the bees.
That's fascinating. I had no idea. I mean, so how long do the winter bees live? I mean, do they have a time limit on their lifespan? Or
They live much longer than summer bees.
Okay.
Summer bees live about 2 months from the point the egg is laid until they've really worn themselves out. Winter bees can live 5 or 6 months.
So when would they generally...
We will see them beginning to disappear in, probably the very end of March, first part of April.
Okay. So then if the summer bees, when will they start to emerge?
About that time.
About that time. Mm-hmm.
And so we often will see a bee swarm in the very end of March or the very first part of April, when it seems ridiculously cold for bees to be outside, but there they are, because the queen has made so many baby bees, and they've all hatched out, and they need some place to be, and
okay.
they will not fit in the old hive. So the old queen
mm-hmm.
lays an egg. The other bees take that egg and treat it by feeding it royal jelly, or bedding it in royal jelly, and when mm-hmm. the little larva hatches out, they feed that larva royal jelly, which is a substance produced on their faces and in their mouths and right at the top of their stomachs. And they feed that to that baby bee for a few days, and she will then be sealed herself up.
Okay.
A little caterpillar, just like
okay.
Rick. They actually weave a little tiny cocoon inside there.
Oh, I'll be darned.
And they seal themselves off,
mm-hmm.
and she will become a queen.
Oh my gosh.
And queens come much quicker than other bees. So in about 15 to 18 days, I think it's 15, I have to look that one up, she emerges, and they tend to make several at one mm-hmm. time. She will go around and find all the others, the first one out. She will find the other queens and she will kill them.
Ah.
Because it is, we are talking about, you know, there can only be only one.
One queen.
Mm-hmm. Not, yeah. The old queen, a day or two before the new one hatches, will mm-hmm. take about a half of the hive and fly away. And she'll land on a tree or a bush or something, probably not more than about 30 yards from the hive.
Okay.
And you see those big clumps of bees in the springtime.
Right.
That's the swarm.
Okay.
They're very gentle. They want nothing to do with bothering you in the least. They have a very specific job mm-hmm. to do, which is to find a new house before the food they've eaten, before they mm-hmm. flew, wears off.
Oh, so at what time period are we talking about that they have to find a new house?
Well, they tend to do it within 72 hours.
Oh.
If they last longer than that, you see fewer and fewer and fewer bees. The swarm becomes smaller and smaller, and eventually it will die out. Or they will begin building an external hive right where they are.
Oh, gosh.
Because the compulsion they have mm-hmm. is to form wax, build cells so that queen can start laying eggs to perpetuate the hive.
Okay.
And so if they can't find a place to be, they will start building an external hive. Remember those cartoons where you used to see this thing, beehive thing, hanging from a tree?
Right, right.
Well, they don't quite look like that, but they look a lot like that.
Okay.
They don't have horizontal lines, they have vertical ones.
Okay.
And you'll see, we see them in oak trees here in Sonora once in a while. You'll see an external hive.
Now,
they're not usually successful. Weather, rain is just terribly hard on them.
Oh, now, when they're looking for a place to build this home, what kind of, are they looking for a particular shape structure? Or are they looking for anything in particular?
Great question. They are looking for something with the volume, but not necessarily the shape, but the volume of a 5-gallon water bottle.
Oh, okay.
Honeybees need that much space.
Space.
Mm-hmm. One of the ways we know African bees differ from our regular bees, the Africanized bees, is that they'll set up in smaller places.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. But regular honeybees need a fairly good size space. Now, a perfect size space for a honeybee is an external wall of your house.
Uh-oh.
It's either a 2x4 or a 2x6
and that's
rectangular
a perfect
shape.
Size.
And they will move into those if there's a hole from the outside. And so we see bees living in buildings, and that's generally what's happened. There's been a little hole
right.
opening, a knot has fallen out,
mm-hmm.
something's happened that's made an opening. The bees find that opening, they crawl around inside and go, oh, this is lovely. I'm going back to the swarm, and I'm going to do the lovely dance and say, I found the spot.
Wait a minute, there's a special dance?
There is. Just like all bees, they have a way of transmitting locations to each other.
And they
do it by dancing.
By dancing?
Mm-hmm. And the duration, the intensity, and the movement of how the bee crawls around on the bees tells the other ones where she's been.
That's amazing.
And so more bees will go to where bee one went, and
okay.
if they like it, they will come back, and they'll all start doing the same dance. And there might be a couple other bees from some other location, and they do their happy dance.
Right.
But if the majority of the dancing says, let's go here,
mm-hmm.
they all get up and fly away within minutes. It's amazing.
Oh.
And they sound like a train or something going by, because it's one big bunch of bees flying at once.
Right.
Off they go.
I've been lucky to see it one time, and it totally is amazing.
It's astounding, isn't it?
It really is. It is just so amazing.
I know.
It's unbelievable.
I think we, in our culture, are brought up to think of insects as frightening or dirty or, in some respect, things that we should not be involved with. But, you know, keeping bees has taught me that insects are fascinating. And bees are amazingly fascinating because they are one of the social insects.
Oh, okay.
The three orders of social insects, bees,
mm-hmm.
ants, and termites.
Okay.
I'm not terribly interested in ants or termites because they don't make honey. You can't encourage them to live in boxes, and you can't keep an eye on them the way I can my bees.
I know, that's fascinating. So once they find a spot, and how do they set up a home?
Well, they all move in there, and there's a group of them who will do nothing but protect the queen.
Okay.
The rest of them begin to produce wax between the kind of little scales on their bodies. Around the bee's thorax, mm-hmm. wax actually just becomes, it extrudes out.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Other bees gather it up with their mouths and shape it in the honeycomb and hook it on at the mm-hmm. top and on the sides. I've even seen them hook it on the bottom. But classic honeycomb has a kind of curve across the bottom.
Right.
Because when bees are making wax and they're really, really excited about building comb, they will form little chains of bees, each holding each other's little bee feet in that kind of arc that mimics
really?
What it's going to look like on the bottom.
Really?
Uh-huh. It's just the funnest thing when you see them chaining like that.
Oh my gosh. That is incredible. So that won't start if they're doing a new hive maybe around March or...
Absolutely. They start right off the bat.
Okay, they start...
The most initial and important thing is to build wax.
Build wax. Get that going.
You need to build furniture in your house.
Okay.
Our friend, the great bee expert, Serge Lebesque, says bees build their own furniture.
Okay, but how long does that process take?
There can be wax built and the queen can start laying within hours.
Hours? Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
Maybe 12 to 24 hours. They've already got some cells built and the queen will start laying.
Remarkable. And then when do they, how does the honey gathering and the honey that we love to eat, how does that happen?
Well, after they get the comb built, they continue to build comb to fill up the hive to support enough brood laying area to have a successful hive. And that, it's a thing probably, the smallest it would be is essentially the size of an orange.
Okay.
And it'll spread over a few different combs. And then it gets bigger and bigger, and sometimes they'll fill up combs completely with eggs.
Oh my gosh.
And because what they want to do is make a lot of bees very quickly so that they can get out and find food, do the work that bees need to do, and collect nectar and collect pollen.
Okay.
So part of those bees now begin collecting nectar and pollen. They fly to the flowers, they collect the nectar, they get the pollen caught on their legs and pushed into their, they call them pollen baskets on a bee's hind legs. It's actually just kind of a rougher open spot where pollen sticks.
Okay.
And that bee flies back to the hive. She has nectar in her upper stomach, her nectar stomach. She will meet another bee at the door or just inside the door of the hive, and she will transfer that to another bee's stomach.
To another bee's stomach.
Mm-hmm.
So
B1, the flying bee,
right,
will transfer her nectar to B2, the house bee.
Oh my gosh.
And other bees will clean the pollen off her legs, and they will carry that in their mouths and put it into cells in the honeycomb. The first bee will take the second bee that's gotten the nectar. She may transfer it to another bee or even to another bee, depending on how big the hive is. And they essentially will come to the place where they put that into the comb. And the process of these transfers mm-hmm. is what converts nectar to proto-honey, that which could become honey. Because regular nectar can't be dried down into honey with a fan or something. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't happen. It has to have the enzymes that come from the bees themselves.
And it's this transfer.
And it's this business in the stomach and in the transferring that inoculates that
uh-huh.
nectar with the proper enzymes to make it into honey.
I never knew that. There's a lot I never knew, but
oh,
this is just...
Oh, bees are so fascinating. They're just amazing.
That is amazing, but, and then...
When the honey is dried...
Right.
Which is done by bees actually fanning their wings to move air past those cells that the nectar's in until it dries down enough. And then when the little cell is full of dried down nectar, bees will take more wax and put it over the top of that little cell. Usually they do them in kind of little semicircular swaths at a time.
Okay.
And they will put honey up in the corners, and they'll put it in the semicircle around where the brood is. where the queen has laid eggs, where the larvae need to be fed. It's very convenient. It's like having the food source, you know, it's like having the grocery store 2 doors away from your house.
How nice.
It's really close.
It's very, that's very
and
nice.
It's arranged to be that way on purpose so that they, it's the minimum amount of energy it takes to raise that larva and get them out and get them working.
Oh, fascinating. But now, in order, because when do you generally harvest honey from your beehives?
We generally do a harvest in the springtime. I would say May.
Okay.
Because we find that we've got so much nectar and pollen and things coming in. They've made a lot of honey. We need to get that honey out to give them space to continue working, which is what they like to do.
What would happen if you didn't remove the honey?
They would swarm.
Oh, and then they would leave.
Yep. They would divide the hive and go.
Okay.
And a productive hive, one that's producing honey and is not swarming, is better for us as beekeepers because we get the honey.
Right, right.
Rather than having them fly off someplace we don't even know where they went.
Okay, and
when we see them swarm, I must say we generally just stand there and go, bye.
Aww.
Sometimes we can catch them, and we do catch swarms all spring long. We find them places people call us. We go and collect swarms.
Okay.
We give them out to new beekeepers in our organization so that they can get started with beekeeping generally.
Well, that brings up a question. If say a new beekeeper does get one of these swarms, mm-hmm. how do they keep the bees at the location that they want them to be at?
Well, if a bee is happy with the box you put them in, they will set up housekeeping. And the queen will be fed until she's heavy enough to start laying. And at that point, she can't fly. And if she can't fly, the others won't leave.
Oh, okay.
Because besides gathering nectar and making more bees, the prime directive of all bees is to serve the queen.
Okay.
We
what
need
a
to keep
nice
her
position.
Warm. Well, it is and it isn't. It's like being perpetually pregnant.
Oh, I
she
gotcha.
Never gets out. She never flies again unless she's swarming.
Mm-hmm.
She only mates once in her life.
Oh my gosh.
Sometimes with several suitors, but only once in her life.
Only once in her life.
And
isn't
she continues to lay eggs the rest of her life. The queen is a beautiful creature. She's long and slim compared to the other bees. They generally almost look like jewels.
Oh
they
my
have
gosh.
A kind of extreme shininess that most
mm-hmm.
bees don't have. They aren't quite as hairy as regular
right.
bees. They're lovely. They really are. And they lay eggs
mm-hmm.
constantly, except for a period from from about the beginning of the cool weather in autumn to, I'd say after solstice, after winter solstice.
Okay.
Then she'll start laying eggs. But even when it's cold, they begin laying eggs.
Even when it's cold. Mm-hmm. So if we don't see anything, no bees outside of a box, that doesn't mean that
doesn't
they're,
mean there. If it's it, cold, it doesn't mean there's not bees inside. Sometimes an amazing thing to do is to walk up behind the beehive and put your ear against it.
Really?
And if there's bees inside, it goes.
And so you can hear them.
You can hear them in there.
Oh my gosh, that is fascinating. That really is. You know, just kind of curious if somebody had questions about bees. Can they call your organization? Do you have a phone number
we
to call?
We do, and I personally have not memorized this number, but if
Is
you
there a
were
website?
To look at Sierra Foothill Beekeepers Association .com, we're on the web.
Oh, good.
And we have a full website. We list our classes. We list people who are interested in collecting swarms from you. We have an emergency, essentially a bee club phone number, which will ring at my house and also a few other people's houses in case I'm not home. So, and if you leave us a message, we'll get back to you.
Okay.
Sometimes when you leave us a message, I
right.
have to warn you, this is Google Mail. And
okay.
Google translates your voice message into a printed message I find on my computer.
Okay. And how interesting.
Like many things, Google translations can be very odd. So if I call you back and ask strange questions, it's because translators got me yet again.
Uh-oh.
Some of these are just the strangest messages.
Now, do you ever, I mean, are your meetings open to the public?
Absolutely. We meet from February through November. Our meetings are on Wednesday at the Jamestown Community Center, which is on Main Street in Jamestown, in the old community center. It's right next to the police substation.
Okay.
Across the street from the pizza parlor.
Okay.
We have a big banner we put up, and we start at 6 o'clock.
Oh.
We have a place that you can ask questions about your situation. You can get mentoring from people who are older beekeepers and are glad to help you. We have occasional parties. We have videos at movies once in a while. Speakers. It's a really interesting
you've,
active
you've
club.
You've had some fascinating speakers that are extremely knowledgeable. I believe you've even brought people from UC Davis in the past.
Well, we've had people, we had one lady come down from UC Davis and talk to us. We also gone to several bee conferences at Davis ourselves.
Okay.
Which has been so educational and so very interesting. And this is the science side of bees and the science side of beekeeping and what's happening on large scales to honeybees in North America, and while people are working scientifically to save the bees and allow us to have those important pollinators of our crops.
You know what? That is so encouraging. That really is. That's encouraging that people are working on it. Just one last thing that I wanted to ask you. What is it important to have flowers or something with pollen close by wherever you're raising bees? And does it take a lot of flowers?
Well, bees will fly up to a mile to collect pollen or nectar. And sometimes even as far as 2 miles if there's not much in their area. But you can certainly enhance the efficiency and productivity of your hive by planting things that they like. There are marvelous lists online of bee plants, but I want to warn you about one thing. The collections of seeds you see at the store and offered in seed catalogs that say, these are great plants for bees, that's a disaster.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I know you would think that would be so good. I'll just plant this.
Yes.
The real problem with it is that bees are preferential feeders. They don't go from one species of plant or flower to a different one as long as they can continue to feed on the same kind of thing they're working on. And when they arrive, they know what time of day to go there for the nectar. They know what that pollen will be good for in their hive, because pollen differs in its quality.
Mm-hmm.
So they like a big patch of asters. 3 by 4 feet is the standard size of patches bees like to work on. They like asters. They like, they just like practically everything. Marigolds are nice for bees. Zinnias are beautiful.
So should you, if you're going to plant something for bees, you
plant
should
a patch.
Okay. And if possible, 3 by 5.
Yep.
If possible.
If possible.
Well, Linda, I hate to say it, this has been so fascinating. I thank you so much. I'm so lucky that you're also a Tuolumne Master Gardener and that we have access to all this information through you. It's been wonderful, and I know we're going to be talking again. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, Debbie.
And we'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Over the Garden Gate, a program presented by the UCCE Master Gardeners of Tuolumne County. I'm Linda Reevely. Thank you for being with us. If you would like to contact us for more information, remember you can contact our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912, or you can look us up on the kaad-lp.org website. Look for Over the Garden Gate. Thank you.